Hello and welcome to Reflex Point, your weekly podcast where we review and discuss the series Robotech one episode at a time. We're your hosts, Major Medina.
And I'm Paul Marquez.
And this week we're talking episode 25, Wedding Bells. Episode 25 first appeared on American television on April 5th, 1985, and the overview reads, Max stuns a battle-hungry Miria by asking for her hand in marriage. The SDF-1 celebrates the first union between a human and a Zentradi, while a mutiny brews among the enemy forces.
From the synopsis, it sounds like a pretty crazy episode, right?
Yeah.
So we get the narrator telling us, the SDF-1 lies in orbit around the Earth. Onboard mechanics and engineers see to the repairs and modifications of the Robotech Mecha. It's the only way that the small force of combat personnel on the giant space battle fortress can ever hope to resist the constant attacks of their alien enemy. One of the most honored defenders of the Robotech team is Max Sterling. Up till now, Max has spent most of his time in pursuit of battle. Now he faces a totally different crisis. After all, what do you say to a girl you met only a few hours ago?
What do we think about the narrator chuckling?
I thought that was great. I really did.
It's very natural, too.
Right?
And that chuckle reinforces my idea that the narrator is human. He's on our side and was, you know, present in a lot of these encounters. Just like one little Lynn Jason.
Hey, man, I've bought your theory, okay? That's Lynn Jason to me.
Like you said, I'm going to be interested to see how that plays out in Southern Cross and New Gen. So in this first scene, we see Max in the park dressed in that same outfit he had presented to Rick. And thankfully, you know, he went with the tie and not the gold chain.
I wanted to see like a medallion, you know?
That's what I was expecting. That's what I thought when I heard him talk about a gold chain, just this big, I don't know, Macross medallion hanging from his neck.
Right, a manhole-sized medallion with the Robotech insignia. So I notice a big water fountain, you know, as he's sitting there waiting, and he starts to chastise himself for asking a girl to meet him in the park late at night. Does this imply there's a lot of crime going on in Macross?
The book answered this because I had the same thought, and it wasn't that there was a lot of crime, and the severity of the punishment meant that even for offenders, there were seldom repeat offenders. So that's the way they position it in the book. But Max was kind of like, he's nervous.
Rightfully so. You know, he's about to meet a beautiful woman, you know?
Yeah. And, here's one thing, though. He didn't ask her to the park at night. He asked her to the park at 9 a.m. in the morning.
You're right. He says, like, he announces that out, right, when he has her hand?
Yes. I don't know when they switched it up. They obviously haven't spoken since then, but, yeah, it's just a little error there.
So Miria is watching him from a distance, and she's brandishing a knife.
Yeah, she's got a look of intent on her eyes, man. She looks kind of mean.
Like a tiger, you know, about to eat that gazelle, right?
Oh, that's a good way of putting it, yeah.
So then we get Miria rushing Max, right? She calls him by name and tells him to prepare for his doom. He turns with a smile because he's like, oh, hey, you know, Miria, and then realizes he's under attack, which she chucks the knife right at him with a perfect throw.
Yeah.
Okay. So when I was a kid, okay, my buddy had this throwing knife, like a boot knife, but it was designed to be a throwing knife, right? I mean, it was a throwing knife, and it was the neatest little knife you could imagine. And it had a little sheath that had the little metal clips that kept it in place. And I loved this damn knife. And it was the only knife, you know, as a teenager that I could throw and actually get, like, you know, out of 100 throws, maybe get it to stick like 3 times. And I was all proud of myself, right? So one time I had it in the sheath and my sister was down the hall I was holding it by the sheath because, you know, the metal clips kept it in place. There was no danger of it coming out. And I'm flicking at her like I'm going to throw it at her, okay?
Okay.
And she's telling me, you know, stop doing that from down the hall, right? And I'm like, don't worry, dude, it's not coming out. And on the last flick, what happens?
Oh, my God.
It fucking flies out. And it looks just like the video you see where it heads straight at her blade first.
Holy shit.
Dude, I kid you not. And you know my family, so let's just say, I don't want to say her name because I don't know if she would appreciate me telling this, but yeah. Let's say her name begins with A, okay? So this goddamn, it happened in slow motion, man. And so this goddamn knife flies out of the sheath, flips over, and then heads at her blade first. And just like Max, bro, she ducked at the right fucking moment, and it went over her head. And she looked at me and screamed, "Mom!" Oh. And so I tackled her, and I was like, "Please, please don't say anything." And I had to pay her. she agreed not to talk about it, but I had to pay some hush money for it.
Hey, whatever you paid, deal it twice the price. Hey,
absolutely.
That's not something you come back from. And were you borrowing it from your friend?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so it would have gotten confiscated.
Yes.
And you'd have to tell your friend, like, yeah, no, we're not getting that back. It's been melted down into an ingot.
Well, no, my mom would have stabbed me with it is what would have happened.
That is wild, man.
Yeah, some dumb shit, right?
Yeah, yeah. What possesses us?
I think all of us, man, when we get to this point in our lives, we're just lucky to get here, you know?
Yeah, completely. So a couple of things on this. I like that Max turns around and he's like, he's got a smile on his face. He's like, "Oh my gosh, you came." And then it's, what the hell's going on? And she's running at him with a knife, like, "Prepare for your doom."
And he had the wherewithal to duck. He didn't have a lot of time to think about that. You know, that goes a lot to show his reflexes.
Well, we know he's got the best.
Yeah. But can he do a triple gainer off of a 3-story building and land on solid ground? I haven't seen him do that. Well. So the knife embeds in a tree, and then he asks Miria if she's crazy. She announces who she is and draws another blade. Max, at this time, finds humor and says, "Well, there goes our first date." Now, Miria calls him a fool at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And tells him to fight for his life. Like, so is she starting to understand humor or is that humor or what would you call that? Where he said, "Well, there goes our first date."
I think she's confused why he isn't taking this seriously. And she, you know, she has a warrior's code. And I think that's why it's a knife battle. You know, it's a hand-to-hand combat. It's not her shooting him from the grassy knoll. Because she wants to face him. And I want to kill you with a knife. And she's a little confused about why he isn't taking it seriously or combating her in the way she would figure would be appropriate if somebody's trying to come at you and murder you.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes perfect sense. So Max asks why he's being attacked. And Miria says she'll have her revenge. And then Max kind of turns and touches the handle of the knife. And then starts to kind of ask about why she's seeking revenge. She doesn't answer. She simply says that she has her reason and continues the attack. I like how she swipes and Max jumps over the swipe. You know,
yes.
it's a mid-level swipe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he jumps over it. He clears it and then kind of does a little somersault to dodge. I thought that was amazing.
Just like in the simulations.
Right?
Yeah, I laughed to myself so hard when she's like, "I have reasons." And he's saying, like, "Look, I get it. You're a Zentradi. You have to fight, but why revenge? What's that all about?"
And then Miria explains that on multiple occasions, he's made her look like a fool. She is the Zentradi's greatest pilot and will not be humiliated by a Micronian. She continues the attack, and Max continues to dodge until he trips over a tree root. This I had a problem with, okay? You're going to tell me that Max can dodge knives, flip, duck, roll, whatever, and then he trips over a tree root?
All right, so the book says, because...
You and your book!
I know. Look, the book does a lot of work for us here. But the book said that she designed it that way. She knew that he was going to continue blocking her or sidestepping her attacks, but she kind of pushed him up against a tree that she was hoping he was going to fall, and it executed perfectly. So rather than this being an example of Max taking a misstep for once, this is more an example of just how good Myria is as a warrior. If we look at it through that lens, it takes the sting off of Max biffing it a little bit.
Right. And I guess, you know, it just occurred to me now that with the pressure she's applying to him, he's allowed to make a mistake, right?
Yeah. And, you know, he's still trying to, like, he's not trying to counter any attack. He's just trying to deflect and not get hit. And she has the high ground.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, she does. So as he lands on the floor, he blocks her knife attack with a rock. So he just grabs this rock.
Yeah, I love the Myria lunging at him.
Right, and starts planning to get the knife that's still in the tree.
Right, so they're kind of running side by side. And she knows he's going for the knife, right?
Yeah, it appears like that, yes.
And man, one of the best lines, that he may be a great man, but what is a man compared to a Zentradi?
And one of the best comebacks when he grabs the knife and he says, "Now we shall see." Because at this point, now he's turned. Like he's probably got that look. Like, okay, you know, there's no reasoning. You want to fight? Let's fight.
Yeah. And they start going at it like they're fencing.
With little knives, right?
With tiny knives.
Is it kind of hard to imagine that you would be able to fight like that?
Yes. Speaking about our grandfather once again, as verified through conversations with my grandmother, our grandfather was a bit of a knife fighter himself in his youth.
Was he really?
Oh, buddy, I can't believe you didn't know this. You have got to ask him about some of these times, because, he got into some scuffles with knives.
Holy shit. I knew that he was a knife person because he's got that collection.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was closer to my paternal grandparents. So, you know, I never said, like, "Hey, Grandpa, you ever stab anybody?"
Well,
wow.
I don't know why you didn't ask that. Seems like a perfectly reasonable question. But one bit of advice he always gave me, well, he gave me two pieces of advice when fighting with knives, as I needed as a 9-year-old. The first one was, when you're fighting, hold the blade kind of with your thumb up near the tip of it when you're doing swiping, because you don't want the blade to go in too far. You're not trying to kill somebody. You're just trying to show them their own blood, and then usually the fight's over.
I think he did tell me something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
You triggered me, bro. Like I just had a flashback.
Activated the memory, huh?
Yes.
Yeah, and he would show me how he held it, and these little swipes he would take. You know, not these long, broad swipes, but these little swipes. Like, try to get them across the chest, and the minute they see blood on their shirt, it's usually over at that point. And the second, my God, I wonder, statute of limitations has to be expired on this, right? Right?
Oh my God. Oh shit.
And the second bit of advice he gave me was that in a knife fight, you commonly cut your own hand on your own knife. That's just going to happen. Get over it. Get used to it. You're probably going to damage yourself before they damage you.
I can see it.
Kind of be weary about that. Well, especially if you're holding it where your thumb is up there, trying not to kill somebody. so to see them, you know, go at it like it's Errol Flynn fighting with those long rapier swords does look a little silly. But at the same time, I mean, who knows what's going to happen when you're in an unexpected fight?
Okay, well, what it led me to think about was, do you remember Under Siege with...
Seagal?
Yeah, Steven Seagal.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And Steven Seagal was the cook on this stupid fucking boat, right? But, you know, he, of course he had, like, special forces training. I don't know. Either way, him and and Tommy Lee Jones get in a knife fight. You know, they both bust out. Anyway, and they're not little knives, but they're not swords. And they have a little blade battle, and it played out pretty good.
Is that right? I'm going to have to watch it again.
Yeah, watch it. Watch it. Because that's what I picture this was like. Like they're blocking with their knives and attacking and dodging. And I was like, shit, that's probably what this was like.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to see I want to see that because I want to see the live action version of this.
Yes.
It's not to say that I wasn't excited. Nope, I mean, nope. This is the opening of the show. You know, we're only what, 3 minutes in, and Miria is finally getting her revenge. It's not her walking around the town misinterpreting things like she's Amelia Bedelia. She's
with her lemon meringue pie.
She's actually like, there's some action going down, and it's one-on-one action. It's not, you know, battle pods and Veritex, which is awesome in and of itself. But I kind of wish the name of the show wasn't Wedding Bells, just because I wouldn't have, you know, when I hear Wedding Bells, I'm like, oh, okay, that's this episode. But if it wasn't, I might not remember, and then I'd be all excited, like, oh my God, it's this episode, what, you know, two right. minutes into it. The original version, the Macross name is called Virgin Road, which I thought, that's disgusting. And then and then I realized, oh no, they're talking about peace. Peace is the road not traveled here.
Okay, that, yes, road not traveled, like for or for the first time. Yeah, yeah. that's hilarious, bro. All right, so sparks are flying, and Max disarms her, and the blade flies up, and it's just perfect the way it sticks to the ground. The silhouette is him with the blade to her, and he's won.
Yeah, that's a good shot. That's a very good shot.
And he's not trying to kill her, you know?
Yeah. At no point during any of this is he trying to kill her. He is just trying to stay alive, it seems like, and understand what the hell's going on.
Yeah, well, she's kind of lucky for that, though, I think, you know, because when he flipped to that point where he's like, now we shall see, she's lucky the Zentradi killer didn't come out in him, you know?
Yeah, his eyes didn't roll back into his head. Yeah. He just got those shark eyes.
Yes.
Pupils dilated, the bloodlust cursing through his veins.
He turned into Bruce, you know, and from Finding Nemo, and he was like, oh, just one little bite.
So, yeah, so, Miria, shocked, disgraced, saying this is a shame I cannot endure.
And she falls to her knees crying, just completely defeated, right?
Yeah. Is this the first time she's cried?
Yes. Well, ever, you mean?
Yep.
Man, I'd have to imagine so. Like, I don't picture her crying for anything.
Well, because they're human, right? Their biology is human. It seems like you'd have a skin-knee situation as a kid where you let out a couple of tears. But I don't know.
You know, like, okay, as an adult, you know, I've had teeth extracted, and I remember one time tears coming down my eyes, you know, as I was at the dentist, but I wasn't crying. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I really wasn't, but just everything that I had gone through, like I teared up, but I wasn't crying. I'm not crying. You're crying.
So, okay. So we could say maybe tears have come down their face before, Zentradi's face, but the emotion associated with whatever it is that's making you do that hasn't been there for Miria.
Right, which is defeat, and she's never known defeat.
Yeah.
Pretty nuts, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like it.
So my notes here say she cries radioactive tears because they're glowing.
You just got to listen to the music, man. Yep. Those are beauty tears. You know,
music kicks in, and she asks. She falls to her knees and she asks Max to end her life.
Man, she demands it
right quickly, as I remember, right?
Yeah. Then Max is shocked and says he couldn't because she's so beautiful.
And then he lifts her by her chin, and somehow she starts to defy gravity.
This is an artistic move, right? This is the butterflies in your stomach, swelling of emotion, and because they're floating up together.
Right, but you know what? I, you're right. It's an artist rendition, and it's like when I, you know, when as I was courting my wife and I kissed her for the first time, I fucking felt like I was floating, man.
I understand. I understand completely.
So in the knife reflection, you see them hugging, and Max wipes a tear from Miria, and he proposes. Why do you suppose she's submitting to this? Like to me, why doesn't she stab him, you know, or break his neck, or
right,
you know,
right? Yeah, in my head, she would have seen this as his vulnerability, right? His weakness. She can play along, maybe touch lips and distract him, and then have her revenge. But okay, so she spent some time on the SDF-1, right? She's seen this pilot that has brought her such shame and anger. But hey, what's the opposite of anger?
And I'm thinking for a moment, I thought too, like she's a warrior. And like you said about the code, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps she's no stranger to like the spoils of war. And maybe she's like in some kind of way, like righteously thinking she's simply the spoil of war at this time, you know?
Yeah, that's not a terrible thought, except that it's a terrible thought.
Yeah, no, it's not good. I'm not, and I feel for her at this point, you know?
Yeah, I kind of have that. Yeah, okay, so let me read my notes, because then we can talk about this. But basically, he asks her to marry him, and Maria asks what Mary is, and Max says that it's something no words can describe. And I'm like, well, you better find some words to describe it. But he's saying it's love, and that's the most beautiful thing there is. I don't know. The spoils of war, you know what? Let's stop calling it that. Let's not call it that. Cuz it icks me out, right?
Yeah, no, it's not cool. But it's not him though. You know what I mean?
It's not
what he's doing. It's simply what she can understand in her warrior caste.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so why doesn't she kill him? Because she's been bested, right? And I like that in terms of warrior code. She's not going to continue to try to kill him. So that can explain that part. The other part is he is in a certain way, when I think about it, and it gets a little cleared up a little later, but he is in a certain way kind of taking advantage of this situation, isn't he?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yes, I suppose, but look at it this way too. What if now, like, it leaves no doubt in her. She's best. This guy is better than her. And the one thing she's been searching for is somebody better than her. And she found him. Now she's coming to a realization. She don't have to kill him. She can be with him.
Yeah. And I do think that very point that you just made is what has broken through in allowing her to begin to feel and begin to understand the feelings of love, right? Or of
something different.
Of right? Something other than the Zentradi. Because I don't know if I can describe it as love at this point. Again, I love Max and Miria. Don't get me wrong. It's just it's just a little rushed.
I thought so. For who they are, I thought it was rushed.
And I can buy Max having love at first sight, right? But Miria doesn't even understand the concept. And, you know, I just hope he goes into a lot more explaining about all of these concepts of love and marriage, what that actually means before she actually agrees to it, right?
Right.
Because it's not like she's a babe in the woods, but she is naive to what she's getting herself into. You know, this is signing a contract without reading it, almost quite literally.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing in the ensuing 24 hours that they're going to be together, A, they're not sleeping a lot, and B, they're talking a whole lot. And by the way, I didn't mean anything lurid by they're not sleeping a lot. You realize what that sounds like after I said it. But, you know, again, going back to that, like, it, you know, when you're in that relationship, at the beginning part of a relationship, you guys stay up all night talking, you know?
Yes, and the night couldn't last long enough.
You know? Yes, and it's beautiful and it's perfect. And hey, let me download you on all of this. And I do think Max would obviously have given her a lot more context for what it is exactly that humans do.
Right.
And
right.
How they relate to male-female relationships.
And so let's say they have that 24 hours that you're talking about that we don't see after all this, right?
Right.
Then she's got a guide, and not only a guide, she's got the guide, you know, being Max. And so he's telling her, like, look, this is the arcade. This is the sushi place. You know, this is the dance place. This is and all around, she's seeing couples all over the place. And she's like, wow, look at how happy they look. And she's starting to realize this is what we are about to become.
Right. And hopefully she's able to say, like, here are the feelings and emotions that I'm having for the first time ever. And he's able to, you know, give some context and say, that's what this is. Or let me explain what that really means. However limited, you know, in terms of words you have to try to explain what love is, other than, you know, hey, it's a chemical reaction that occurs in our brains kind of thing, you know? Right. I don't think he's going down that road. Obviously not, because he's like, it's love and it's the most wonderful thing there is.
Right, right. But she's, you know, she's from what they say, you know, comparatively human. So she's smelling him, you know, she's feeling whatever women feel when they are attracted to a man. And
contempt? Oh. Sorry, that's putting my own experience in there.
And, you know, and imagine, I'm not trying to get a cheap, explicit word in, you know, but I'm saying, like, imagine that any of their physical activity would probably be in a almost combative, very physical way, you know?
And they're
meant for each other in that way too.
Mm.
Like, if I can imagine, I bet you Sammy and Max dated. If I'm not mistaken, the book says that.
I can't confirm that. I know you've brought it up before though.
I want to say that somewhere along the line it says that he, Max, you know, had bad luck here and there, and he'd even dated one of the bridge bunnies, and it turned out to be Sammy. And, like, what if he was just a little too much, you know, because she's like, yo, I know you're one of these pilot jockeys, but holy cow. Now he's got someone that can at least hang with him, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? That actually, with that in mind, it takes out one other question I had. And that was just, is this the first time that Max has entertained a female caller? I guess not. I did have the thought that this was all kind of brand new to Max too. And maybe it is, maybe this, you know, love at first sight. I've been seeing this girl around, can't get her out of my mind, have to ask her out kind of thing is a first go around for Max. But obviously, you know, from him dating others, he has had the dating experience before.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but in the same token, he's let's say he's seeing her all around, right? And then He sees her at the arcade. That's his place, you know? if I was a young man and I saw my, you know, this girl that I'd been seeing the whole all over the place and she's playing Street Fighter.
You would have lost it, man.
Yes, I would, you know, that's the one right there.
Will you marry me?
Right after a knife fight in the park. I'd be like, hey, my grandpa taught me, you hold your finger here so you don't kill me.
You know, that's the other thing. Taking away the other part of it, where he may or may not be taking advantage of the situation. I love the character fact that Max would have asked her to marry him and just goes for it. I don't feel like he would do that normally or with, and hasn't done it with anybody else. It's not that he's that kind of guy, but rather he knows just how special this, this bond is. And I think that that very thing, you know, the way they've met, the way they've fought each other, I think there's respect from Miria. And that's blossoming into something more. And that's why, to answer your original question from 20 minutes ago, why she's entertaining this whole thing.
Right, right. Okay, well, it's a fun thing to explore because there's so many avenues for it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Some very dark.
Because at first I didn't care for it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, agreed. And I was trying to figure out, like, why is this okay? Why do we never give it another thought? And, you know, I think us, not to put words in your mouth, but I think me and you love Max and Miria's relationship.
Right, right.
Like, the good couple, great couple. And I feel like so many other fans, Robotech fans, love them too. So I didn't want to shit on that. I've been racking my brain here to try not to shit on that.
But that's why we're here, to ask the hard questions.
That's right. So, continuing on, we cut over to the SDF-1's cafeteria, where the defected spies and the terrible trio are sat at a table. I like that they're still hanging out. You know, this wasn't just a one and done with the discotheque.
Right?
And they're talking about heavy things. They're not just sitting there, you know, flirting or whatever. But Rico's asking Conda if the Canadians will offer them political asylum.
Right. So I like that Rico asks, you know, if they think the Canadians will offer political asylum. And it's like, Rico, you don't even know what a Canadian is. But can you imagine? Because you must have been hearing that from time to time. So you're just like, oh, yeah, these Canadians are going to tell us or perhaps offer us asylum.
That's true. Yeah. And who are the Canadians? Are they the bug-eyed beasts or?
right.
You know, you saw a picture of a panda and that's what you're thinking in your head. Like, oh, that's a Canadian. Right. And then Conda says that if the request is denied, it means that they'll be stranded in space forever, which sends a shudder through the terrible trio. And Sammy's saying, please don't say something like that. And Kim says, surely someone on Earth will help us. And then Rico says that they must have faith. And I wonder what his basis for faith is.
Right?
Like, what again, is this something he's heard? Is he, well, I don't know. I mean, the Zentradi have the warrior code. They got nothing else.
Well, okay, but I kind of understand his optimism, too, because he's got to be like, you know, 2 months ago, I was just this low maybe officer, right? I don't even know if he was an officer on a Zentradi ship, knowing nothing about any of the concepts I know now. So yeah. All of that was, like, unreal to him, so... Then now that he's in this position, something like the Canadians offering asylum does not seem impossible to him. You just got to have faith.
Yeah, yeah. Very honestly can say stranger things have happened, right?
Yeah, for him, yeah. So they all lower their heads in uncertainty, and Max passes by, spotting who he's looking for, and approaches a lonely Rick.
You know, this is interesting. They don't normally... take the time or the effort to, you know, have the next scene intersect with the last scene. I thought that was cool.
Right, right. And so Rick seems to be startled from some kind of thought as Max sits. Max tells Rick he's going to get married, which makes Rick spit his coffee and reasons that they only went on one date. Max protests that they are in love. Rick advises to take time and think about it, and Max explains he's not worried about the time. He explains Miria is his entrati, which upsets Rick, and he can't believe Max has made such a mistake. How could you make such a mistake?
Yeah. So here's a question I have. He hears that she's a Zentradi, right?
Yeah.
Is the assumption that she was one of the Zentradi seeking asylum? And is that Max's assumption too? Or does he know at this point, has it been let out? Oh no, she snuck onto the ship and with the intent to gather information. Oh, and kill me.
So it all depends on, do you think Miria up to this point has admitted that by now? You know, as the in the 24 hours that we were just discussing that.
Yeah, because this is the next day.
Right, where they were saying, you know, hey, you know, Max is telling her everything about this great life they're going to live. Did he say, by the way, how the fuck did you get here?
I didn't see your name on the logs.
Right.
I would imagine she did.
And
the reason I think that is I think Max is super inquisitive and would have just pounded question after question after question. And she has no reason to lie.
Or she doesn't even know the concept of lying. Like, I don't think the Zentradi really lie.
Which makes sense. And that's so true. Like, I don't think we've seen anybody lie in any capacity, any Zentradi lie in any capacity. The Zentradi really are the best of us.
I don't know about that.
Okay. So one little character beat here is Max is so nervous that he has a handkerchief with him and he has to wipe his brow with it.
Wow. That goes to show you Max respect for Rick, right?
Well, yes. He sought him out and is effectively seeking his approval.
Maybe he just doesn't know what to do. Like, you can't just marry his Entrati, you know? So he's like, well, let's take it up the chain of command, you know, and Rick is the next one up.
I guess so. I guess that could happen. But, you know, they're friends. They're friendly. Rick calls it a gigantic mistake. And that kind of, like, gets Max riled up.
Right.
And he says he loves her. There's no problem that love cannot overcome. And he smacks the table. And then Rick does this great thing where he's like laughing. And then he gets all serious saying that the problem is Max's silly idealism.
Yes.
And he continues that love isn't going to make him happy. You know, obviously putting on his own problem.
Because he says something like, trust me, I know, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, Max stays pretty stalwart and saying it doesn't matter what he says. He's going to marry the girl with or without his approval. And Rick's telling him to be sensible. And, okay, my thought on this is I kind of agree with Rick on this.
Yes.
If any of my, you know, J.O. friends came up to me and said, I met this girl last night, we're going to get married, I'd be like, you're insane. Right. This is ridiculous. I don't care for it. I agree with Rick, and it would be hard to say, all right, Max, what you're doing is right, and I fully support you.
Right. And even after, because Rick continues to try to reason, but Max explains she's a special girl. So Rick kind of says, well, I can tell you like her a lot. And then Max offers to introduce them. Okay. Rick is kind of amused about it. He's like, oh, this should be interesting. And then Miria starts to approach. Now, back to our last part where we were saying, like, if your buddy was like, hey, I'm getting married to this chick I just met at the arcade, because Rick was there. Rick knows who the date was with,
right?
You know? And so it's not like a total strange thing. He's like, dude, what are you doing? And so let's just say your buddy tells you, you know, he's going to marry some chick, and Phoebe Cates comes walking down, you know, the little aisle to meet mm-hmm. you. You're mm-hmm. still telling your bro, yeah, she's hot, but I can't. It's a bad idea.
Yeah, because a lot of things go through my head when I hear about those kind of situations. And it's usually like, who's driving this? Or do you feel like you have to do it because you're going to lose her otherwise? Or you're just trying to lock that down real quick? And is this really anybody's first choice? There's a ton of things. But the very least thought I have is, this is your soulmate, and you should you should get married because it's super fucking romantic. But this is a bridge too far for me.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. You know, if there is any possible way I can support your stupid ass idea, I will do it. You know, especially in matters of love, because I want someone to do that for me if the situation's reversed, you know?
Yeah. Now, here's the other thing. This is all the advice I would give, right? I would not take it. I'd be Max.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would be all pissed off, like, with the unbridled rage that Max has right now. Talking to Rick, I mean, he's showing more emotion and rage than he did in his fight with Miria, right?
Right. Yes. If he still had that knife, he'd have plunged it in Rick's eye.
Yeah, and then Rick catches one look at her, and he understands everything.
At the sight of her beauty, it makes sense.
And Miria extends her hand out. I have to imagine that Max gave her that little tidbit on human culture or human interaction.
So Rick is so enraptured, he starts to agree with everything and even offers his services to help kiss the bride.
Yeah, well, when Rick does the about face, I did a pause because I was taking notes. And you can see Max on the side. He has his arms crossed, his eyes closed, and a little smirk on his face when he realizes that Rick's coming along with him on this. And it's funny, not only that face, but he also looks like Jughead from the Archie comics.
Oh, the one with the crown, right?
Yeah, like Jughead gets this smug look on his face every so often with arms akimbo. And Max looked just like him in that one frame I freezed on. I'll probably never be able to freeze on that ever again, but I thought it was funny that basically Max is just like, mm-hmm, I done told you.
Hey, it's exactly what I was trying to tell you. Wouldn't that be the ultimate vindication too? Like, you're like, okay, see?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let me say this just to throw it back on you. If you're telling me about this woman and and you're like, no, I'm going to marry her, and then Phoebe Cates walks up, I'm going to about face as well. Right. 100% support you, buddy.
Right? Okay, you're like, yeah. You know what? If I can be the best man, you know, like,
and what is that? Like, I'm even gonna help you kiss the bride. Like, Max has to be like, damn, dude, get off my Kool-Aid.
Well, there used to be some kind of thing like that, wasn't there?
Prima Nocta?
No. <I'm down. laughs> But some kind of joke of kissing the bride, you know, like, you, I don't know, like, I seem to recall something about your buddy was supposed to do that to make sure she was all right for you, but...
Say what?
I don't know. Anyways, Rick offers his assistance. Max is... He's amused, but in a kind of like, yeah, whatever, fool. Yeah. Try it. I dare you.
Right? He's got to be proud because, you know, he bought her that dress, you know? He's got to be like, yeah, pick the right dress, too. Did her hair the right way, that single braid, or not braid, but like her hair's pulled back and draped over her shoulder.
Imagine what that conversation was like. Cause he's not going to do that. He went to the beauty parlor with her. Cause he said, okay, Miria, look it. And you know, he's not forcing anything on her. He's just like, this is what human women do. He probably asked Sammy or Vanessa or even Lisa or Claudia, maybe especially Claudia. She's mourning right now. And any talking to her and getting her mind off of it, like, they're all probably teamed up trying to help her, you know?
I could see it.
So she tells him the spot to go to, and some lady looks at her and says, okay, yeah, and you know, she's in that jumpsuit fucking neckerchief thing that she had when she fought in the park.
Mm-hmm.
So the lady is like, okay, well, yeah, you look crazy, but she probably notices her skin, her face, and says, you've got something I can work with. Like, Max, get the fuck out of here. Go to the arcade across the street and come back in 2 hours.
Oh, man, know? I'm missing a makeover montage, you know, with the...
yeah.
Martin Short from Father of the Bride as the hairdresser, you know?
Right. Franz or whatever the fuck his name was.
Yeah. That's what I want to see. I could take a whole episode just like that. Let's make it a beauty montage makeover.
Yeah. So the narrator says that a wedding celebration begins immediately, right?
Yes. It is a day destined to be remembered. The full squadron of fighting Mecha aboard the SDF-1 showed its colors. It is a celebration that everyone could attend with an eager heart. Not only is it the first outer space wedding, but the joining of a human and Zentradi marks the dawning of a new era, and perhaps an end to this costly Robotech war. As for Max and Mirya, it was, very simply, the happiest day of their lives.
So you get that music, that dun-dun-dun, you know, and they fly, and they're showing the colors, and...
Yeah, so Max's Veritech is modified at this point, right? Because it has the pilot and co-pilot cockpit.
Right, so he must have the cockpit of a VF-1D.
And we have talked about this before. The Veritechs are modular, right?
Yes, they are.
All right. So that makes sense. And Mirya's in her wedding dress and holding a bouquet. And they fly through an arch that's created by the Veritechs in Battaloid mode, raising up the gun pods.
Yep.
Firing light, as the book describes it. Light through some reflective material that's been pumped out from the ship. And it kind of looks like when Marines create the arch with their sabers, right?
Yeah.
The wedding arch.
Yep.
I like it. I like the rainbow road that they're flying down, again, created by the ship somehow.
Right, and the only problem I'm having with this is that, okay, bro, for someone who even knows what a wedding is, it's crazy stressful.
Right, yeah.
And Mirya, this is what, at best, this is 48 hours later from the night they were trying to fucking stab each other.
But Global has pulled out all the stops, right? Anything she wants, anything they want to make this wedding go off. So I think, you know, this wedding was planned and overplanned. Everybody took care of everything. She didn't have to do a damn thing other than get a dress.
I know, man. But enough of it could have just made her slink away and disappear because she's like, what the freak is going on right now?
You know? Yeah. I wonder what it feels like to, you know, she's been hiding in the ship, and now all eyes are on her. But you know what? I don't know. I'm sure Max is empathetic, man, and he thought about this, and he's prepared her for it. Here's what's going to happen. Here's how it's going to go down. Are there any things you don't want? Any things you do want? You know, if you don't want anybody watching, we can do that. But I'm sure Global wouldn't have wanted that because this is... with purpose that he's creating a big hullabaloo about their marriage.
Yeah.
And rightfully so.
Right. But then it spirals back into craziness, you know? Like, what if she did say, yeah, no, I don't want to get all crazy. And now he's got to explain to her, look, the captain thinks this will be great for our two races and we might get peace and fucking blah, blah, blah. And she says, okay, fine.
Well, I'm sure she'd understand.
Well, again... I could agree with all that if it was a little bit longer than fucking 48 hours that they were trying to stab each other.
Look, I agree. there's four weddings between us two, all right? and that would be a great test to Max and Miria's relationship.
Right. So I'm digging it. I love the lights. I love the rainbow road. I love everything about it. And I love that it is the beginning of Max and Mirya.
Yes.
But goddamn it, it is kind of hard to swallow that pill that it could happen that fast. But I only think of that as an adult. I'm just saying, even if the logistics of it can all happen, that I'm not saying couldn't happen, you know? Yes, they throw the entire resources of the ship at this wedding, and they can get it done in 2 days. What I'm saying is that Miria has the mental fortitude to survive it. Because when you know what it is, there were times when we were getting married, me and my wife, not you and I.
Thank you. Thank you for the clarification.
Just in case anyone was confused. When we were getting, for the clarification. So when we were getting married, like, there were times I was like, dude, this isn't worth it. Like, it's too much.
Yeah.
And I was like, why couldn't we just have this little thing and get married and we're done?
And we're done. Yeah. Yeah. Because that's not how you do it. That's not how Max would do it, man.
I know. But I can't see. I just see Miria struggling a little more. And I feel bad for her. That's what it is. I feel bad for her. I don't like this part for her because I feel that she's being taken advantage of.
That's a hard thing to not feel, right? Like, is she being taken advantage of? Is everything being rushed and, like, everything's being pushed through? Would it have been more sensible? Holy crap. Would it have been more sensible for Max to not push this as quickly as he did? Is this selfish of Max? Let us know what you think.
Yes, please. Please.
Is it selfish of Max to have pushed this wedding as quickly as possible? Now, I know the captain loves it, right? Right. He loves the idea of this because it's strategically going to help him out. And I know it works out, but that's not to say that it was the right thing to do.
Okay, so let's get off of that because that has taken a lot of our time for this episode just because it's a hard thing to get through, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, but so moving forward, because it does turn into Max and Miria, and that is a great gift Robotech gave us.
It is. I think that's why it's never really come up in my head before.
Yeah.
You know, not until we're breaking it down.
Now. So Britai asks Exidor what Miria is doing as they watch the wedding. Exidor explains that she's getting married. He describes it as a male and female living together. Britai is appalled and wonders if Miria has found the Micronian way of life irresistible, as she actually looks happy at doing her job. Exidor thinks she's fallen under the charm of the ace pilot and admits the Zentradi have no defense against love.
Yeah, so first off, Britai and Exidor are back. We haven't seen them in a while, and so glad.
We haven't, and there they are.
I find it weird that Britai keeps using Miria's full name. I don't know why he does that, but it's fine. Probably doesn't know her personally, right?
Yeah, I think he just knows her as the ace, you know?
And then he's thinking for a moment like, oh, she's just getting, she's going deeper into the belly of the beast, but then sees that she appears to be happy and is like, oh, no. I think we've lost her, our ace pilot, our ace female pilot.
Because you can recognize a smile and then like a smile, you know?
Yes. So this whole thing, you know, the power of love. Why isn't this cheesy? Even the singing is really just they talk about the singing being putting people under a spell, you know? And the concepts of whatever Minmay is usually singing about is love. How does Robotech walk this line of not being, you know, cheesy or tropey, and I'm behind it, and I believe in it, and I'm happy for it?
Yeah. What I think of it as is, it's a concept that's being introduced to the Zentradi. That you're like, wow, like that would be incredibly horrible not to have. And they're finally getting a taste of it. Like, you know, it makes you really seriously think about what it would have been like not to have love, you know?
Yeah. It does kind of make sense to me that they would view it as this weapon from the species, you know, that they've never known. And you know, that makes that warning from the Robotech Masters make all the sense. Like, look, you can't even conceive of why these people are a danger to you. That's how crazy what they will introduce to you is. And they're seeing it come to fruition. So on one hand, it's not cheesy because of that. And then if I have to really look at myself and ask, do I believe in the power of love? I guess I do, man. I guess I do. And yeah, it's just not cheesy to me.
Right.
And I fucking love it.
I love my four-month-old grandson. And man, like more than I've loved anything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I can feel that. You
know? Mm-hmm.
And so the Zentradi are masters of weapons. They're warriors. So even the Zentradi have some kind of knowledge of the merits of psychological warfare. Okay, we have to assume that. They might not be good at it.
Well, wait a second. Would they? Because that entails the manipulation of feelings.
As war, you know, from all the races they've ever faced against, I'm sure they've had to put some, they've realized that the power of fear helps them win.
Right.
But when they come up to somebody who's got an equal type of weapon against them, their psychological warfare against us is something like the Statue of Liberty is kaput, you know? And we're like, okay, you know, during the Gulf War, the Iraqis had tried to broadcast over the radio that American TV stars were sleeping with the wives of our soldiers and that they should want to go home because they're being cheated on. And one of the stars they mentioned was Bart Simpson.
Ah, that's rough.
So they had no idea how to attack us with psychological warfare.
Okay, that's fair. That's an interesting story.
Yeah. So now the Zentradi, yes, they've got, if they just wanted to, they could annihilate the SDF-1 in a second. They could just say it and it's done.
Yeah. So let's give a big round of applause to the story writers of Macross. Because they took this concept that would be ridiculous in you know an untrained hand and created this story that is about love and the power of it and you know makes us swoon.
And 35 years later is still like, wow.
That's unbelievable.
That's why I love this goddamn show.
Yeah, I'm with you, man.
At the reception, photos are being taken and the cake looks like the SDF-1.
Yes. People. Yeah. Hey, do you think Max had to put any money up for this?
No. No. Hell no.
And not even for the dress or shoes or...
Dude, it seems like everyone was so excited at the prospect of this, you know, that they were just like, you need something borrowed? You need something? Yeah. No, man, I really don't. I really think that they were probably feeling bad. That they were like, dude, we can pay for that. We really can, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So then we see them sat at the bridal party table. And I notice no groomsmen, no bridesmaids. And the master of ceremony says, ladies and gentlemen, today is a very special day. It's more than just a wedding celebration. It's a bonding of two souls dedicated to the protection of our Robotech colony. First time I've ever heard that phrase. Robotech colony.
And does the book say who that announcer is?
No, the book does not give us any details about any of these tertiary characters.
Wow.
Yeah. I kept waiting, kept looking, but nothing. And then he introduces the man who consented to this special occasion, the guest of honor, Captain Henry J. Glovel. And Glovel's dressed fancy as fuck, man. I think the Navy refer to this as a full dress uniform.
And his shoulder lapels, they're not even lapels, right? They're
the things with the tassels hanging off of them, the shoulder tassels.
Oh, okay. No. But he's got that whole kind of cloak thing around his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And I picture more of an overcoat like Admiral Hayes was wearing, you know? But that shoulder piece looks to be a different part of the uniform.
I think that babushka shawl that he has on him is just part of the full dress uniform.
I agree. And so then Glovel, he's asked to speak. He starts off congratulating the couple and starts to identify that Miria was one of the enemy who destroyed a lot of their ships, right? Maybe killed Roy.
Yeah, man, right? That's why I wouldn't have invited Claudia. But she's there.
Yeah, but Claudia's bigger than that, man. Like, she really is.
I know, but she has shown, like, she wanted revenge for a little while, and it may have subsided. We haven't seen evidence one way or the other. But, I mean, you remember? She had some vim and vigor for killing them scum trotty. Here's the, okay, I've brought this up before, and a lot of people have talked about this. Whenever I'm watching Star Wars, I'm so caught up near the end in that third act. I'm so caught up in the movie when they're doing the trench run that I forget that Han Solo comes out and saves Luke from Vader attacking him.
Right.
Like, I forget about it each time. I don't think about it. I'm not thinking ahead. I'm like, holy shit, how's he going to get out of this? And then Han Solo shows up, and I'm like, oh, right, it's fucking Han Solo. Well, every time I watch this episode, when Glovel goes off the rails there for a second, I'm like, what the fuck is happening? How's he going to come back from this? I always forget how he turns it.
He goes deep. You're right.
So much so. And I love that they have both Max and Rick going like, hey, whoa, Captain, come on now. And the book described, you know, Miria is just sitting straight up, Max turning white, and Rick going like, oh, my God, that's what this is all about.
And that's what we all imagined it to be, you know? So he lists all the evils the Zentradi have caused the humans.
Yeah.
And then Glovel explains that he brought that up to reinforce they must forgive the Zentradi, not out of ignorance, but because they are a strong nation?
Yeah, yeah. But because we are a strong and willing nation.
Right. And the Zentradi have known nothing else. He goes on to say that Zentradi blood and human blood are the same. Max and Miria had that blood test.
So this is a long monologue and probably one of the greatest damn monologues ever put down on celluloid. Yes. I'm a bit sad that I didn't get to bring this whole thing up when we were talking to Greg Finley.
We totally blanked on it, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is a moment, man. I mean, we even have people in the show saying, what a leader of men, you know, Glovel's for peace.
God, I'm surprised he didn't think about it. Because if he's not like super proud of this part, he should be.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sad that we didn't get to tell him like how amazing
yes,
this whole monologue is. And it's a long one. It has to be. Having written down the entire thing, it has to be the longest single monologue in the entire show.
Would you like to go through it?
Not really.
Okay, good.
But it's not all incense and peppermint, right? Because we do see some people. We see a guy kicking a water fountain.
Okay, and bro, that guy, that's me, man. That's me. Because I like I can't imagine, like, who did that guy lose? Who did that guy lose to the Zentradi?
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's no going back. And you're a better fucking person than me if you can. Because Rick does it. Rick lost Roy, okay?
Yep.
And still forgave the Zentradi. And who knows what other countless people lower than Ben.
Yeah.
And he does it, okay? But if I'm a pilot, you know, and I'm trying to, I'm that guy, I think he's a pilot. Do you think that guy's RDF?
Initially, no. No, I didn't think so, but.
I think he is, but it doesn't surprise me either way, but I think he is.
Yeah.
And he's just there and he's like, what the hell's going on? And he's trying maybe to get into it, but he's just lost too much, man. So who did he lose to the Zentradi that he kicks the fountain like that and says, who wants peace? Because goddamn it, I can understand that. Like, I get that.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it too. I don't. I'm going to have to think on whether or not he's RDF or not. The book doesn't give us any extra clues other than to say, you know, that was just a representation of one guy, but that many others on the ship were faced with the same sentiment as him.
Yeah, well, I hope that poor guy finds peace, 'cause I get it.
No kidding. No kidding.
So then the Admiral shuts off the TV that he's watching with Lisa and calls Global crazy.
Yeah, and Lisa comes in that, look, it's the only way to avoid our destruction, and goes back to, you got to stop the Grand Canyon operation. And he, I don't know why they put this in, but I love it. You know, he snubs out a cigarette and he's like, it's too late for that. Yeah.
Nothing can be done about that now.
Yeah, yeah. Accented by the fact that he snubbed out a cigarette.
Okay, and then he turns the TV back on. He's like, click, and then he's like, click again. And Global's continuing about extending our arms and friendship and learning from mistakes to live with people from different cultures. And then he dedicates Max and Miria as the heroes of today. So even back then, this stuff was telling us to try to learn about, man, people can be different, and that doesn't mean they're evil or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, and you got to think this is a society that has overcome, you know, a civil war, and they did so because of, you know, the potential of invaders. And Global's whole point is that, look, these aren't people that are different than us. They have the same blood we do. And if we could forgive each other during the Civil War where we did fight brother against brother, we need to learn even more from that because we overcame that and we can overcome this. And this is a symbol of that very thing happening and quit kicking fountains.
Okay, and as a very impressionable preteen boy, like this message was, like, I got it. I got the blood part of it, you know, like it's the same blood. And it made me kind of think about people different from me, you know,
mm-hmm.
in real life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I appreciated this show. Because it was important. Like, you know, you didn't expect any cartoon to bring that to you.
You know what? That's the word I would use. This was important. And I know we as kids, because we talked about it, we loved Global.
Yes.
And it was important to hear from a cartoon character or not, but somebody we respected vis-a-vis a cartoon.
Right, because your elementary school teacher and your parents and all these adults that you were just like, they don't get it, would tell you what you should or shouldn't believe or just to think about this or that. And you'd be mm-hmm. like, shut up. You don't even know what you're talking about. But finally, one of your heroes in a cartoon, and you've never, you know, like that's the last spot you'd think any kind of inspiration would be bestowed upon you.
Yeah, it's sneaky, man.
It is. But man, if I have to tip my hat to appreciate that.
And I got to go back to say, you know, to reinforce your sentiment, and that's why we're talking about it 35 years later.
Yes.
That's why this thing is, yeah, I don't know, it just gets in your blood or something.
I see what you did there. All right, so...
So his speech concludes with thunderous applause, right?
Yes.
People congratulating the couple, congratulating the Zentradi and the captain right. as well.
Long live the Zentradi, long live peace.
Right, how in the world did one man's speech... incite that much gratitude for everything he just talked about. That's the power of that speech. And we cut over to Rick looking out into space, what I'm guessing is a couple of minutes later, hopeful that the two races can live in peace throughout the entire universe. And I think it's the act break, right? Like, I think that's the end of act two.
Yes, yes. Okay, so then we come back with Dolza giving the order to destroy the enemy and then incinerate the planet Earth.
Yeah. The condition on Earth is a threat to the secrets of robotechnology.
So at this point, because, you know, the only thing that has let the SDF-1 survive is that they need to recover the protoculture matrix.
Right. That's the whole reason for keeping the SDF-1 afloat.
Right. And so the entire situation has become so messed up that that is no longer the most important thing anymore. They've lost a lot of ships to this ordeal.
Yeah.
And now it's like, okay, you know what? Cut it. We're done. Destroy the ship.
Yeah, they've willingly lost a lot of ships in pursuit of getting these secrets. But Dolza's done.
But see, it is the Robotech Masters. Like, they've sent their best soldiers after this thing. They didn't tell the Zentradi what this thing is. They just enforced to the Zentradi how important it was for them to recover this.
But Dolza knows. I think we've talked about that before, right?
Well, yes. I think some people are privileged to know. But even the lowest Zentradi is just like, we're trying to get... This is the goal. The goal is to get that protoculture matrix back because the masters want it. And that's the most important thing in the world.
I don't agree. that all Zentradi know that that's the reason why, because I don't think Chiron knows that. And if anybody was going to know, it'd be Chiron, wouldn't it?
Well, I mean, I think if the lowliest Zentradi knows, then Chiron definitely knows. But I think Chiron has more of a connection to the Robotech Masters than a lowly Zentradi. So it would be more believable that he knows even more, or might explain his fanaticism to getting this thing back because it was for the glory of the Robotech Masters.
Yeah, right. And by proxy for his glory. So I think this is interesting here. There's a change that happens in this one little 30-second mark here.
Yes.
Where in this moment, Dolza becomes the big bad. Like, he's the guy we're worried about now because he's just threatened to incinerate Earth completely. While Britai was only concerned with getting back Zor's ship.
Right. So then I have that it says some dude starts hitting the drums and Minmay is introduced as someone who has brought happiness to them all.
Yeah, so this is the wedding reception. Right? We got the band out there. We got the guy hitting the drums. I don't know who these people are. And is this Minmay's band? That'd be interesting.
I don't think she has a band, dude. I think she's like a pop singer, you know, that has...
Yeah,
that.
It's just a backing track.
Yes. Or, you know, bands do play with her, but, you know, through some kind of attrition in a certain area, they're just like, hey, this band is going to be put together to play for her. And then you're like, wow, like that's the some shit you call home and you're like, guess who I'm playing for this Saturday? You know?
Yeah. So, yeah, she says she's going to sing a song that talks about people just like us. We're far from home, separated by loved ones, but are strong enough to find the hope that joy can bring when two people discover love. And I swear to God, I really thought she was going to start going into My Time to Be a Star.
I couldn't wait for your take on this, bro. Because I knew it, and you did not disappoint. But you're right. So
you just It's about me, it's about you.
You express it in a way I can't.
She starts singing The Man in My Life.
Yes.
Which we see moves Miria.
And isn't that's not a song? Like, to me, I get that this man in Minmay's life's not paying attention to her, right? So why the fuck is this dedicated?
They had three fucking songs to choose from. And they used two in this moment. By the way, if you haven't gone on YouTube and seen Simone Anasinger singing these Robotech songs, buddy, you haven't lived. Yeah. Go and do it.
Please.
Well, she shows what this could have been. No shade to Rebecca, whom we love with all our hearts.
Everything.
Yeah. But man, she really belts these out.
Yeah. And you know, I Rebecca, if they'd have given her a little more to work with, I'm sure she would have made it work.
Oh, completely. Completely. Yeah. And I'm sure it was just, you know, well, it's tough to say because they did have songs that they could have gone off of from the Japanese version, which, by the way, are great. I was actually talking to one of our listeners, Doc Ramos, on Instagram, and he was saying that he puts it on every so often. And I was saying, hey, when I drive to California, it handles everything from Vegas to about Zizix.
Right. And because I saw that and I'm like, hey, cool. Because when I'm heading up to State Line, I'm going to use that same playlist.
Yeah. Yeah. Great playlist that, you know, I have to go through YouTube, but I got the premium YouTube now because I'm tired of commercials. So I can download stuff.
Nice. That's what being a big podcasting star does for you, man.
You know what? I got it. I didn't even blink, buddy. I didn't even think about it. I thought reflex point is going to see me through on this one.
Because everyone's going to order a t-shirt ad. Give them the website.
Deep public. By the way, I ordered two of them because I wanted to check the quality, you know? I wanted to make sure they looked good. And I would recommend getting the V-neck in Heather because it looks amazing and it's comfortable as all get out. And it was a perfect fit. And a couple of other people who have bought them told me the exact same thing. It was a great shirt, great fit, and the logo looks good.
Okay, and if I promise right now, Mage, if I see this out in the wild, if I see someone wearing a shirt out in the wild, I will approach you and we'll get you something Robotech related.
Oh my gosh. Well, you may be tackled, so wear with caution. Right. So we see that Rick is moved as well, not just Miria. And I think in these shots, it's Rick thinking through all the people because we see Claudia and Roy with his hand over or on Ben's shoulder and Lisa. So I think that's all in Rick's mind there. But we do see Lisa watching as well. And she calls the song beautiful. You know, she's watching alone at this point. She's not with the Admiral. And the book described Lisa as having that feeling of, how could I ever compete with this woman for Rick's love?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're right.
So she's moved by it so much so that she's like, oh, okay, well, no, I get it. And that's got to be a pretty awful place to be back on Earth, knowing this Grand Canyon is going to get shot off. She's probably not going back to the ship, and it doesn't matter. She's not there, and she has to know because of the TV broadcast that Rick is in the same room as Minmay. Who knows what's going to happen?
Yeah,
that sucks.
That's not enviable for sure.
Yeah. So we cut over to Zentradi ships racing towards Earth, and the back over at the reception, the announcer says that Minmay will now sing a song dedicated to the couple. And then we see Britai, and he says that this woman has a voice that can make a man feel sorrow. Can you name, and I'm sorry to put you on the spot here, but can you name some musicians or a song that make you feel sorrow?
Yes.
Because I relate with this so much, and you know, I like music. I played music for a long time as a teenager. I studied it, music theory and all that, but for him to be having that kind of emotion, I was like, man, there are a lot of things that can make me feel sorrow, you know?
Yeah. And music definitely is one of them.
Yeah. So he says that, which I find a pretty amazing little character beat for Britai here. You know, not only am I happy to see him back in this episode, but it's an unexpected line from him, or like an unexpected realization that he has. But at the same time, it's like it fits and it's perfect. It feels earned and not rushed.
Okay. And then he gets even crazier to admit to Exidor that it grieves him this time, that the time has come, you know, and he does not look forward to this task.
Right. Because he gets, or he's watching the broadcast, and then that's interrupted with orders from Dolza, not directly, but that they're going to do a full-scale assault on the SDF-1. No survivors. And then just cuts out that transmission.
And that same order, exactly like that, has probably been given a million times. But this time, it hurts.
You're right. I'm sure they're used to that order more than any other order. Yeah. You know, like, oh, hold off, just trail behind the SDF-1, occasionally test them, no big deal. And they're like, what? Why? You know, at least most of the Zentradi are like, you know, normally we just go in and we kill everybody. Why aren't we doing that? And then there's a quick cut to Minmay. She's singing To Be In Love, which had to have sucked for Rick.
Right?
Yeah. Like, it's not a huge room. The reception area is not huge, right? I'm sure most of it's being taken up by the NBC crew. So he... Oh, by the way, that's something else. How come Rick isn't front row? He's like a couple of rows behind at least. When we see him, people are in front of him. I would imagine Rick went ahead and got front row seating, reserved seating.
Because of Minmay?
Because he knew Minmay was going to be there, and he's like, I'm just going to sulk in the back here.
Yeah. It's a great example. Like, where is the relationship at this point, you know? Because he's not there, and so it just muddies the water even more.
Yeah, I think their relationship is nowhere at this point. Like, I don't think they've talked in a while. But he does understand. The last thing we saw was Kyle proposing, preparing to propose.
Right.
Brutal. But that love triangle means nothing to us right now because of Britai literally admitting that I'm gonna miss these the spunky crew of Micronians,
of enemy combatants.
Yeah, and doesn't look forward to the task. That's deep.
God, so the Zentradi scramble for Dolza's order, but some start to say they don't want to fight.
Yeah, guy's gripping Zentradi's gripping a Minmay doll, and gives a darn good reason for it. It feels like he's fighting his own people. Now, I'm guessing that means that there are Zentradi on the SDF-1 now, and not that he feels a kinship to the Micronians. But he might feel some kinship, right? You know, that might be what that Minmay doll represents.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the Minmay doll that Rico gave him.
That, right.
Yeah.
So the SDF-1 goes to red alert. Civilians panic and flee. Max is excused from battle, but refuse. And Miria wants to go as well. And swears that they will fight together. I totally get that. Max doesn't want to sit out, ever.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
That's not hard to believe at all. Miria wants to go with him.
She's a warrior.
And they already have the Veritech modified for the trainer model.
Right. Right.
So, all right, hop in, right? Who cares?
And the both original Macross and the book handle this moment a lot more tenderly because they argue for a second and then Max says, you know, I have no choice but to let you. And it's like, eh, I don't love that wording, buddy. I know it's 1985, but I'm not in love with that. And both the book and Macross go into more along the lines of Myria saying, you know, hey, if we're going to fight, we're going to fight together. You know, that's how I want to fight, is by your side. And if we die, you know, we die a glorious warrior's death together.
Okay. Yeah. And that's a much easier pill to swallow.
Yeah. And then they're saying, I'm going to fight with you. And he goes, I guess I'll let you. You are my property after all. Right. Did I forget to mention that?
Did you see that real small print?
Oh, and this Purina nonsense? No, it's Sterling, baby.
So Veritech's launch, and Rick says, let's do it for the captain. Global kind of pans to him, says they hope he hopes they all return safely.
And Global's smoking, and I don't think anybody's given him any guff for having a lit pipe at this point. Because he would have to... I get the feeling that Global really does think this is it.
Yeah, yeah.
So Max and Myria are back in Max's modified Veritech.
The VF-1D.
Yeah, as they reach the demarcation line. Well, they're not in a VF-1D. They're in Max's... It just has the VF-1D cockpit, right? Because no, it's still blue.
No, right. But that's what makes it a VF-1D.
All right. That's fair.
The fucking arms, legs, fucking wings, all that shit, that's all a VF-1G for generic. And you just change the cockpit and that changes everything else.
All right. All right.
No, no, no. Why is that wrong?
I've been searching through my head right now, trying to figure out how to prove you wrong.
Because of the head. The head lasers are different on each model.
Oh, okay.
And you never see that when the cockpit is disengaged from the unit, the head goes with it.
What do you mean?
Okay, so when Roy picks up Minmay and Rick early on?
Yeah.
Like, when he detached the cockpit, the head didn't come with it. The head of the Veritech.
Right, right.
Right, so maybe there's more to just the cockpit than making a model, a certain model number.
Well, I would imagine a trainer has different battle capabilities, limited battle capabilities.
Who the hell knows?
Because you have to be training for the ship you're going to be in.
Right.
All right. I'll consult the manual like I should have done already. So they get to what they're calling the demarcation line, which I like, and thousands of battle pods are just sitting there waiting for them. And a dogfight ensues. And despite the fact that they flew out, the battle comes to the SDF-1 pretty darn quickly.
Right, right.
So Max is locked on a battle pod, but Myria tells him not to shoot. And there's about a 2-second pause where I know I was wondering, oh, is she not going to be able to fight? What's going on here?
Right.
But she's just waiting for the perfect moment to disable the battle pod by hitting them on the back below a joint. And explains that she doesn't want anybody to get hurt. And it all clicks in. You're like, no, that's perfect. Perfect solution. If only the Zentradi were doing the same thing, but they kind of are. You got an entire squad of people who are like, we're not going to fight. And Max is confused about it, but she says, you know, it's like the captain said, it's time we do more than just talk, that they have to act. And while Max is like, this might cost me my stripes, he agrees and begins shooting to disable them rather than destroy.
Right. He keeps shooting him in the taint and then... And it just disables them. So Max continues to disable, and Rick sees this and then comes on the screen and asks Max what's going on. Max tries to say that the last two were off target, but Rick smells bullshit when he smells it. You know, he's
what? Yeah. This is a great conversation. Where he's like, don't believe you. Oh, I see what you're doing, and I'm with you. And he starts shooting to disable as well, saying, the time has come for peace. Damn, I like this, man. This shows the impact that Global's monologue had.
Yeah, like everything coming full circle, but all of it being put together by that monologue.
Yeah. So on the SDF-1, Global gets the report that the starboard thruster has been damaged, and we saw it get blasted.
Yeah. Dude, I thought it was destroyed, not damaged. When I saw that. Yeah.
And he lets out a pained grunt, just like, man, this is just the beginning. This is it, right?
And then on Britai's ship, an officer orders Simza and Trotty to battle stations. They refuse, and they even aim their guns at him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like that, you know, it's not just one guy. They all raise him up. It's like, what did you say? And the officer tells him, don't be foolish, but they're steadfast. They are not going to fight their friends on the SDF-1. The officer books it. And one of the defectors say, look at him run like a trog with his tail between his ears. Man, I searched. I cannot find out what a trog is. If anybody has any information on what a trog is and why his tail is between his ears, let me know. But I liked it. I think this is like the only strange idiom we hear. We'll keep watch, but I know up to this point, we certainly haven't heard anything like this. And I don't know. It's world building without being too much. I liked it.
I loved it, dude, because I always picture some little furry animal with his tail between his ears running away like a puppy with his tail between his legs, you know?
Yeah, yeah. So Britai gets the word of betrayal and says, it's mutiny? And Exidor explains that a large number of their best pilots will not leave the mothercraft and refuse to acknowledge that the order was given. I don't like the wording mothercraft. I don't believe they understand the concept of mother and father. But that's just a small thing. And Britai is shaking with anger, I'm assuming, at this moment, right? The mutiny's never happened before. And Exeter is trying to explain that they have a good reason, but to Britai, there's no good reason for mutiny. And Exeter tries to continue explaining, but Britai says enough and walks out. And, you know, if Britai wants to leave Exidor in the dust, all he has to do is walk at like half speed.
And during that little exchange, it seems like Exidor is trying to explain two conflicting directives. Do you get that? Because like one seems to be like firing on the ship when their friends are there is a violation. But then refusing Dolza's order is another violation.
Yeah, but I believe he believes in the first one, that to attack them is a direct violation of their warrior code, because it'd be firing on their own people.
Yeah.
And when he says, when Britai says, issue the order of reclamation, Exidor sighs, like in relief. Yeah. And just like, yes, sir. But I do have to tell you that's a direct disobedience of high command. But, you know, and I think Britai knows he has to say that. So he walks out of the room quickly, like duly noted, but doesn't let Exidor finish. And he's just like, it doesn't matter. I'm going to issue the order of reclamation at this point.
All right. So Britai orders the forces back. And then Global is told that Zentradi are pulling back and wonders if it had to do with the wedding.
So here's a question, just to go back a minute. When he asks for, because it is confusing, when Britai tells Exidor to issue the order of reclamation, did you understand what he meant?
Yes.
Like, did it make sense to you? Because there was a moment there, because because it doesn't seem like that's the thing that Rita is going to do, you know, leading up to this. It seemed like it was quite the opposite. When it was issued, I was like, oh, maybe I don't understand what reclamation means. Something along that lines. And then it kind of clicks. The reason Britai is so angry and he's kind of shaking is because he knows he's going to do this. And I don't think he can reconcile why he's doing it exactly. Or if it's the right thing to do.
Right.
And
right.
It's just like, just emotional outburst. Do it. Because I don't even know how I feel about it at this point. It seems like a quick turnabout, but I think he's been, I think he knew he was going to do it pretty much from the moment he got the order to do the full assault.
And you think Exodor is relieved too?
Oh, I do. I interpret when he gives the order, I interpret Exodor's sounds that come out of his mouth to be relief.
Like you saw the voice of reason, you know, at least according to me, right?
Right, right.
Damn, you're right, dude. I didn't even think about it in that.
I do, just because I was trying to figure out, like, why is it? It seems like Britai's on one path, and that path is I'm going to follow out these orders. And then just almost as if he was like against his better judgment, he says, never mind. Bring everybody back, and then I have to go think about what I've done or what the hell I'm going to do next. I mean, he said he felt sorrow or that he's starting to understand sorrow in some way. So I think he's dealing with a lot of stuff. I think he is. And all I know is that I think this was a great way for the day to be saved, if you will, you know, for the SDF-1 not to be destroyed.
Right. Where you would think that in the 1,000 times before, like, why didn't they just press the attack and wipe them out at all? This made sense why they pulled back.
Yeah. It made sense. And it also, like, more so than relief, it's like, I want to be in a movie theater and see that moment and stand up and be like, yeah!
Start cheering, high-fiving the guy next to you.
Right.
So the Veritechs are called back, and then we get over to Rick in his room, right?
Yeah. So we do see that there's a shot of the empty corridors of the barracks. I think just indicating fight's over, everybody's back in their bunks, and then we cut to Rick sleeping in his bunk.
And he can hear Maximiria, right?
Yes. Yeah, Miria is yelling that something is on fire.
They're struggling with cooking.
We hear breaking glass and, you know, Rick sits up and he's annoyed, right, at the yelling. And then we cut into Max and Miria's room with Max putting out a fire and saying that she's going to have to be careful since she tried to use oil to cook a coffee pot.
Yeah, he's like, you cooked the coffee pot.
And Max says that mornings are going to be rough without any coffee. And then they laugh and all seems well.
Everything's fine.
I really liked that scene.
It adds humanity to that little part, you know?
Yeah. And shows that, there are going to be struggles. But you know what? They're going to get through it with grace and aplomb and laughter because Max is just in love with her. She could do anything, and he's just gonna be there for her, and he's gonna help her out.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, it's kind of a cap of saying like, hey, they're gonna be okay. Don't worry about them.
Right. But this is also the crescendo of this area, okay? Because, you know, with everything we've seen, the Max knife fight, you know, and going to Brick and the captain doing his thing and Britai and all this stuff, it crescendos up to now they're just in an apartment and she lights everything on fire and they laugh about it.
Yeah.
Because now it starts to go back down. Rick is still wallowing in his self-pity, okay? And he thinks to himself that he remembers Roy telling him that he has to like somebody before he loves somebody. And then he says, I like Lisa. I don't know. Maybe even and the weight of all of this to someone who has, because Max, it appears, has figured it out. If something happens to Max from here on out, he can say he lived, he fought, he loved, and then he died.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
I'm not sure Rick can say that.
No.
But I'm not sure Rick can feel he said that he can say that.
And kind of the through line that we've always said is that I don't think Rick understands his own feelings. And this is a great way of showing that even when he starts to analyze them, he kind of shuts down. You know, he just doesn't have the tools to be able to do that.
But I like how this, it brings the episode to an end at such a smooth way, where, because he drifts to sleep thinking this, and I don't know about you, but I felt like I drifted to that calmness with him, because in the anxiety and just the craziness of all of the wedding, the fight, the this and that, it, now we go back to somebody who doesn't have his life together. We've just figured out Max figured life out for himself. You know, he's gonna be happy.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's go back to Rick, and Rick, having endured all that, is now thinking to himself, you know, I like Lisa, maybe even, and then he's like, I don't know, I'm just so tired.
You're right. You're right. It's a great way to like to end this episode that's been action packed from the get go, in a way that's like, okay, we reach some peace, and that peace is with Max and Miria. They're going to be okay. But at the same time, we have more story to be told. It's amazing that they were able to end, and I only thought of this after you mentioned it, with us kind of drifting off into, I feel okay right now. I don't know how I'm going to feel tomorrow, but right now, I just need to get some sleep, and we kind of turn off.
Because he's able to fall asleep.
Yes, yes. Ah, yeah, that's a great point, man.
And then the episode ends.
With the narrator picking up, turmoil continues to surround the floundering battle fortress. But for now, all is quiet. Peace and warmth settle in upon the wayfaring clan of space survivors as they await the adventures to come. In our next episode, no. Just kidding.
All right, Mage. So who is your MVP?
All right, my MVP. I kind of want you to go first.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do it then.
Okay. All right. Who's your MVP?
The guy who kicks the fucking fountain. Man, bro, I can't help but think who is that guy lost, you know?
Yeah. The book described that fountain as the peace fountain. And I think that's the same fountain that Max and Mirio were at in the park. I don't know if it was called the Peace Fountain at that time or if that came later on.
Right. So in the timeline of Robotech, it's the Hill Valley of Robotech.
Yeah,
right?
It's the Twin Pine Fountain.
But man, I feel bad for that dude, and I'm glad he didn't just sit there and be like, "Oh yeah, let's make peace." Like, he felt it, and he went with what he felt.
Wow. All right. That's amazing.
So you, sir?
You know, because it's funny. It's like when you said it at first, I was like, "Oh, that's just that. You're just stunt casting," you know. But I believe you.
I'm not. Yeah.
And I'm with you. I'm with you on that. My MVP. Now it's easy to pick Glovell as your MVP on this one.
Yes, of course. And you wouldn't, and you couldn't be knocked for it.
No, and I think we've talked time and time again about during this episode about why and what an amazing impact his speech had, and the man, again, like, full strategy. He saw an opportunity and he took it, but without taking advantage of Max and Miria. However, my MVP for this episode is going to Britai.
Yeah.
Not only was I happy to see him back, because I've been missing him, but there's something, you know what? Actually, I want to read from the book, if I may.
Yes, please.
Okay. So, you know, at the beginning of each chapter, there's a little excerpt usually.
You're talking about that italicized writing though, that gives a little bit of a lore.
Right, right. Usually from some fictional book within the Robotech universe. But this one right here, I do want to read. Dolza, my old friend, old watchdog. The naive straightforwardness of the Zentradi could be your downfall someday. All things are so simple to you. The eye sees the target, the hands aim the weapon, a finger pulls the trigger, an energy bolt slays the enemy. You therefore conclude that if the eye sees clearly, the hand is steady, and the weapon functions properly, all will be well. You never see the subtlety of the myriad little events in that train of action. What of the brain that directs the eye and the aim? What of the nerves that steady the hand? Of the very decision to shoot? What of the motives that make the Zentradi obey their military imperative? You call all this sophistry, but I tell you, there are vulnerabilities to which you are blind. This was a remark made by Zor to Dolza shortly before Zor's death, known only to Dolza, Exidor, and Britai.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
It was that thing that made me choose Britai, because I'm sure Dolza fell on deaf ears. But to maybe even to Exidor, but to Britai specifically, because of the experiences he's had, I think Zor is part of the very thing that changed, that is changing Britai, or allowing him to be open to be changed. And so I got to give it to Britai.
Can't argue. Right on. So what do you give the rating for the episode?
This episode, Wedding Bells, is a 10 through and through for me. There's not a misstep in this. There's not a wasted line of dialogue. Even when we move over, you know, we see everybody, by the way. But we see Lisa, we see the Admiral, we see Britai, Exidor, Dolza. We see the three spies and the terrible trio. And none of it feels forced. None of it feels like it was unnecessary. The most amount of humor comes out of Max, because this is overall a very serious episode. And we do see that while Global's speech has a great impact on a large majority of people, we do see the guy kicking the peace fountain, and rightfully so, because you can't expect it to affect everybody. In fact, it would be unrealistic if it affected everybody the exact same way. But by and large, what's Global talking about? He's talking about peace. And I think a large majority of people can get behind that. But there's another part of the people that would never be able to live and coincide with these, with the Zentradi, given their losses and what they've had to give up personally. So it's not a gray, you know, just like Zor was saying to Dolza, it's not black and white. It's gray. And I think this episode followed that perfectly, while at the same time giving us a ton of action and things I wanted to see. So it's a 10. How about you, Pablo?
Wow. So 10, I would do nothing to try to change your mind about that. I give it a 9. Okay.
Yeah.
And the 9 I give it is only because, for whatever reason, I cannot shake the icky feeling of just not believing that Myria would submit so fast.
Yeah. You do have to, you have to go to some dark place to, to understand why, or we had to go to some dark place right. to understand why she would submit so fast.
And so, you know, yeah. So other than that, you know, 9, I believe, is strong, and
9 is fantastic.
I enjoyed the episode thoroughly.
Yeah. Yeah, this is one I didn't mind watching multiple times. Paul, anything? Here we are at the end of this episode. Anything you wanna tell the people?
Okay, so hey guys, we have T-shirts, and if you'd like to order them, where can they go, Mage?
Okay, just to make it easy on everyone, the address is tpublic.com/user/reflex-point-podcast. That's where you can find our logo design. for a t-shirt. We threw them up there. You know what? I wanted a t-shirt. This was the best way we could get it done with a good quality t-shirt. And I will say it is a good quality t-shirt. And again, just as a warning, I may tackle you if I see you out in public wearing it.
With a big hug. And it does help support the podcast, and we appreciate everything.
Absolutely. And we are beginning preparations for the next season of Reflex Point. We do have some guests coming up. When we work out the schedule, we'll reach out to you. If you want to be a guest, you can reach out to us at reflexpointpod@gmail.com. Especially if you have some strong opinions about a specific episode. I mean, I know there's been at least three episodes that if I wasn't the one doing this, that I would have begged to have been on. You can find us on Instagram at Reflex Point Pod. We can't thank you enough for listening, especially given the long pause that we had during, I guess it started during the holiday season, but went out through very recently. I find it funny that we are now in April, the very month that these episodes were released in 1985, and we will endeavor to be bringing you these episodes on a more regular basis, as we've always promised on your very special weekly podcast. So thank you guys for listening. We'll see you next week.
Everybody be safe.